You know, letting everyone know, Reckon for Vengeance, October 17th. I'm hyped about it, but Bandai doesn't seem to be, so I'm kind of helping them with that.
someone has to be.
Yeah, someone has to be. Okay, yeah, I'm going to slow down for a second. Let's introduce Steven to the show, a cosplaying as a Metal Gear Solid character.
Yeah, you know, and what's funny, I don't know what's going on with my lights tonight, but I look like a bad guy from like the old Turtles beat 'em up game where it's like when you got them down to a certain life and like they start turning pink and red. I'm like, oh, geez.
That's actually really good. That's a better reference than I was thinking. I was thinking you look like what, like a Nicholas Wendig Refn movie, whatever that guy's name that did like the, didn't he do like Drive and then that, the Ryan Gosling films where he just stands there stoic there and everything's go. Pink yeah. and blue.
I need a scorpion jacket.
Yeah. That's a good idea. Especially when you had those sunglasses on.
That might be Halloween for yeah. sure.
But no, like, dude, sometimes the short will show up of you in sunglasses. And I'm like, dude, that's like a badass look. Like, I don't know what.
Maybe that just needs to be my look. I'll be like that, one of those sunglasses at night kind of guys.
Nah, you pulled it off. But anyway, so everyone, welcome to the show. And for those listening, you don't have to worry about this next part. What it is for some reason, again, this software is so awesome. And in the past six shows, including the awesome interview I just did, the webcams freeze intermittently. And luckily, Sarah at Streamlabs, who is awesome, literally replies back to me every day with like, okay, try this, try that. Send me, you know, like the stream you've been doing. And now I got a new Gundam fan. No, I don't know if that really happened, but maybe.
Well, you know, and it's amazing. Like, I'm glad that the customer support has been so good for you, and that they're responsive. And I don't think that it takes anything away, at least for the most part. Like, you know, when you throw on some Gundam Explained in the background and you're just kind of listening, the audio quality is good. So, you know, to your point, all of you guys who have not watched the interview with Gavin Hignite yet, the audio on it is fantastic, and there's so much like insight, and you know how you always wonder, like, oh, you know, like you have these conspiracy theories about like how Hollywood works and like Netflix and like, oh, is there production interference and stuff like that? He talks about it.
I know.
Like,
I know. It was neat. Like we were talking earlier before where it was like, it's interesting how he was able to like delve into those aspects of working with Bandai without really throwing shade at anyone, just more like, just you see how things typically are. There's usually production notes, but Bandai Sunrise, they're like, hey, here's a note of how to improve that idea, not like, hey, let's take that away, you know. It was
exactly when you talk about like the scene inspirations for some of the stuff from Requiem for Vengeance, and he was like, you know, oh yeah, you know, I wrote my idea, and then Bandai comes back and they said, great idea, let's do this to like really sell that idea. It's like, yeah, so I don't know. For me, it was definitely eye-opening. And, you know, I know that like Bandai catches a lot of shade from time to time when it comes to things like around marketing and, you know, oh, well, the devs aren't listening to GBO2 fans and what have you, you know. But what you need to know is that they are listening and they are trying to make a great product.
Yeah, I know. And just think about it, like according, you know, to the interview, and as far as he knows, he says this is like the first, you know, Gundam work, you know, animation that was written by an American/English first. And it was like, here, we're proposing this. And I think why it went so smoothly is because Bandai and Sunrise was able to recognize, as we were through this interview, that Gavin knows his stuff in terms of, he knows what's the cool stuff to like and hold on to. But then just as a seasoned writer, he knows how to make sure that. And then the other thing he said that I liked was he doesn't know if this is the only time he'll ever work on Gundam. So he's like, I need to go all out and do everything I've ever wanted to do. You know, that type
of thing. Yeah, he was like, I need to make sure that any mobile suits I want to showcase, I have to get them in now. You know, like,
yes. Oh, I love that. And he even like alluded to like each episode having its own sort of mobile suit that goes along with it. And the kit bashing is being part.
It's cool because like that in itself is kind of an homage to the original series, you know? And he had like kind of a unique approach to Gundam, or at least a unique introduction to Gundam, you know, as well, because I know most of us, we were wing kids and stuff like that, but he wasn't.
He was a UC.
He was a UC, not just any UC. his first experience with Char's counterattack. So you guys who have not watched that interview yet, or at least listened to it again, you know, technical issues aside, you need to go listen to this interview and hear how did someone come across Char's counterattack before A, the original series, or B, Gundam Wing living in America.
I know, that's crazy. You know, I could be wrong, but oh my God, I feel so bad. I forgot her name. She was on your show for the Springtide.
Oh, Vampy Bit Me.
Vampy. Didn't she say something similar to that in a way where it was like, yeah, the VHS tapes?
Yeah.
Were like the only way to get anything.
And when Gavin brought that up, I was like, that was me and my brothers. Like we were always waiting for the VHS tapes to drop, and we would go to like some sketchy anime shop in the mall. Like it was like a 45-minute trip to this mall that had the one anime shop, and it was like, okay, did the tape come out yet? Did the tape come out yet?
Yeah.
But yeah, same thing with Vampy. I think she said that her parents actually owned a video store.
So they were able to get like these imports or something, or
so they were watching places. Imported anime before it was getting released to the public, which is, I mean, those types of stories, just I love to hear how people get hooked into the franchise.
Yeah, I do too, because it's interesting to think about, like, you know, how even with you, wasn't it where Wing was your first?
Yeah. Wing was
but the you, first. But really, you really love UC. So it's kind of cool that even if someone finds Wing first, you can still, but even with me really getting into UC first, I've then grown that appreciation for Wing, where then there is that kind of nostalgia of, because I think it just embodies kind of the 90s cartoon, like awesome, like for that age cartoon, you know.
I think so. Yeah.
Again, that interview's up. It is awesome. And I think another big takeaway too is, you know, a lot of times, and especially people like us, Steven, we like to get into the minds of creators because we are creators ourselves. And a lot of times we want to know, oh, that's a neat element to connect the dots. What was your inspiration? Where did you get that from? And I think because a lot of Gundam, historically, we're getting interviews that are translated. It's kind of hard to really feel that one-on-one with the creator. You know, like how much I would love to sit down with George Lucas. Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
How much I would love to sit down with Tomino, but then I would need a translator. And then I would feel like then I might be acting different to get my point across, you know?
And that's like, have you seen the clips from that latest Tomino interview where he gets like really heated and he's like, you know, when will politicians learn? Can you name a single time in history that politicians or soldiers have learned? And it's like, wow, you know, he gets fired up about this stuff.
Was meanwhile, that the same that new meme you made came from? I saw you posted it.
Yeah. I guess the interviewer presented him with a bouquet of flowers, which I thought was hilarious. But
and then he like kind of, yeah, that's perfect. So if anyone has an idea for that on Hatter's Discord, he has the meme posted up.
I guess it's the Tomino version of the Drake meme. Like,
that's kind of like that. But I think it's cool because in context of Tomino, it would be funny what he's like saying no to, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Like unicorn?
Unicorn. I mean, I was thinking of just putting like F91 in.
Well, you know what? It's funny. There was that other meme I found, and it was a little video I posted from the Key and Peele sketch where I think Peele is Key. I don't know. Peele is the president or something, and he's going and hugging like, but he's like no, get it, black guys. Yeah. And then, but so each one was like a UC. You know, that he was like, and when he got to unicorn, he didn't do anything at first. And then like someone whispered into his ear and then he's like, okay, come on. Like I kind of like that. Cause it's kind of like that. It's like, it's funny how it's not a Tomino UC, but it's deep and has those themes. And it's like, it's kind of close enough.
Yeah. You know, it's a UC adjacent.
Okay.
But no, I mean, and hey, I thought it was fantastic. And this is, you know, a testament to how well you are at getting people to open up on your show. You know, Columbo, the fact that Gavin Hignite was like, love Columbo. Like I was watching it through the pandemic. Like what?
I know. And that's so crazy. Cause I just, and get this, I had just finished watching it the whole series 2.5 times because in the middle of watching it, my wife saw what I was watching, and then she's like, I want to watch it too. And then she wanted to watch through the whole series again. And then she started it again. And I was like, okay, look, let's watch something else. And there's like that Korean cook-off chef show on Netflix, which is really good, by the way, if you guys haven't seen it.
There you go.
Yeah, speaking of Netflix. Yeah, 7 days to go. I made a little short, and it's on Twitter. Just those things that they normally hire, like, or they have their intern do right before a movie comes out. You know, Disney's like, okay, make some vertical videos.
Yeah. I don't know. So it's crazy missed opportunities there.
There's so much cool imagery. I didn't make any special edits. I just threw in a part of the trailer that shows some badass scenes, and I'm like, that's going to get anyone excited.
But you know what you did that makes it even more exciting is that you cut out any scenes of people talking, which the one thing that everybody complains about is like, oh yeah, the voices don't match the
that's true. I actually made sure to make it where it wasn't anyone talking, just so it was straight up the action. And then I added the little recreated Zeta music that I made just for fun, even though
honestly, like, you know, that's something that, you know, you and Gavin talked about, like, you know, music being a very powerful part of the creative process. And what's interesting is, like, we haven't really heard any music from Requiem for Vengeance yet.
Second trailer, or was it the clip where it does actually sound really good and it's the guy from Helldivers 2? So it has that similar sort of like orchestra that's like swelling into the action, like getting you ready and then going in. So what's cool is that is a difference of because usually Gundam music has more of that poppy kind of rockness to it, or it goes into the like where I think Japan excels, where I call super orchestra, where. Yeah. It's like they have two orchestras and a band with a guy playing drums, like that song Mobile Suit from Unicorn.
Yeah.
Like part of, the guy's like doing riffs and playing like on the drums while there's like a whole orchestra.
It's like, I mean, there's even a part like in some of those Unicorn tracks where it kind of goes like into like an EDM, like, and it's like,
yeah, just the right type of electronic or whatever stuff going on. Yeah. It's
the same thing with like even Witch from Mercury, which, you know, again, I have a whole appreciation for Witch from Mercury for basically everything except for the story. the music in Witch from Mercury is fantastic because it's that same combination of like you said, it's like an orchestra, but then there's a slight elevation to it. There's a little bit of like an electronic feel to it. You've got the chorus, like the swelling of voices that is really awesome. So.
You know, that is interesting. I remember, this is going to sound odd, but when I was very, very, very young, this was before I really got into video game music. I've always been in music, but when I was really young, I it's like I only liked electronic music because I felt like we're in the future. We don't need guitars. And it was like once I guess it was when I was a teenager and I started hearing like Offspring and Bad Religion, and then I would see them play live and I was like, oh, I get it. Part of its performance and playing, you know, is fun. That's why, like, and I haven't done, I want to get it set back up again, but like I have my electric drum set in the garage and I have this Gundam playlist that I would just go and play like drums to everything. And I want to get back into that. It's a good workout.
There's something to be said. You know, I took piano lessons many, many years ago, and my instructor, he was actually a guy that was the same age as me, but, you know, he was just trained in music theory, and so he was trying to help me kind of ground myself because I was, like, kind of a self-taught guitar player, and he was like, you know, one of the things that makes music really powerful is he was like, don't feel bad if you're not hitting the note the second that you're trying to hit it when you're singing or when you're playing. He's like, oftentimes it's that little gap in between, you know, the notes that you're supposed to be hitting that people actually find appealing. And so that really stuck with me is like, you know, to your point, yeah, in the future, you know, when you've got MIDI generated sounds and you can create entire orchestra sounds within just a sample pack on like, you know, GarageBand or Fruity Loops, you know, you're losing a little bit of the imperfection that makes the music really resonate with people. And to your point, it's like the performance aspect of it, you know, there's a, whatever that 300 millisecond slide is from one note to the next, that's where the magic is.
Yeah. You know, and you bring a good point because, yeah, I've been using FL Studio to make a bunch of music, and I've showed you a bunch that I've been having fun with. And what I...
It's really good.
And thank you. And what I've realized helps with me in that, because you're exactly right, like, you will sequence it, but there's not that opportunity to necessarily mess it up or accidentally do something. That happens, but what I end up doing is humming through the day or whatever, the thing I made, and then I come up with the next melody, and I'm like, oh, that's what I need to do. So then I can go back and adjust it, and I think that helps when you're not there live with a band and trying to on the spot.
And I think that that's what makes video game music so appealing, is like, because the sound library is so limited, especially like on old chiptune stuff.
Yeah.
You know, you really had to rely on the melody. The melody had to carry everything because you didn't have the, you didn't even have the hardware that could produce percussion. Like, I think I've probably told the story before where it's like on the old NES, they didn't, the audio channel only has like three tracks.
Right.
And one of them is static. And so what they would do is they would use the static as their percussion. So whenever you're listening to like Mega Man tunes and it's like dee 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 dee, but then you hear the drum beats and it's just like,
yeah, exactly.
All they're doing is they're tapping into the static audio track, which is, you know, from a creative perspective, like you said, you know, you and I are both creators and we both appreciate when people have to work within these limitations.
Yeah, I know. And things come out of that. When you're limited, it's like, yeah, sometimes you can get something cool. And I think that kind of speaks on that bigger level, like when then George Lucas does the prequels, where, hey, I don't want to throw shade at them, but they were like almost super big, where they weren't too refined, like he had to be forced with the first Star Wars and Empire, you know?
Exactly. And I think that there's something to be said about that when it comes to Gundam movies, too, is it's like,
yeah,
you know, I think Gavin even suggested, like, that he, if he could, you know, would he work on live action properties? And it's like, well, yeah, maybe, but sometimes the budget's not there. And so you have to work within what you've got.
Yeah, not only the budget, but he even talked about how he it seems like he has a little bit more freedom with these properties that he's working on, and which is pretty interesting. Real quick, Lucas Garrett saying, Sawano Hiroyuki. That's the unicorn guy, right? Change the game when it comes to anime series scoring. Unicorn is still top tier in its orchestration. Yeah, and at first I didn't appreciate it, too, until at first I thought it was so noisy. That was the thing about when I first watched Unicorn, when it was the first Gundam thing I tried watching because I bought the Unicorn, and I'm like, they're talking nonsense constantly, and the music is just so much. And that's interesting. This brings up a good point I heard from Robert Meyer Burnett, the guy I talk about a lot. He's a movie guy.
Yeah.
And he was talking about that a lot of times. Someone will say they don't like country music, but it's because they didn't allow themselves to give it time to understand what they were listening to. And then I think I've learned that with, like, for instance, Unicorn, not only watching it, but listening. Once I understood, I took the time and did the homework to get into Unicorn and listen to the music. Then it's like, holy crap, this is actually amazing. So it's because I am the type that I will say, yeah, I don't listen to country.
Yeah.
To be fair, I don't think I've ever really given my time to listen to it other than the pop country song that then would be on the radio. And I'm like, I don't care about this, you know?
Yeah, you know, I think that when it comes to all forms of art, you know, I don't want to say that like it's, you know, like taste is an acquired thing, right? But I think that you really have to engage with the art on its own level. And I think most people kind of want, whether it's a movie that they're watching, a game that they're playing, a song that they're listening to, they want the art to do all the work and to come to them and meet them where they're at. But sometimes I think, you know, you really do have to kind of put yourself in the right frame of mind to appreciate what's being presented to you. And I think we've talked about this when it comes to like people who kind of binge watch Gundam, and it's like,
no,
I mean, you're consuming it as if it's like, you know, Instagram reels or something like that. Don't do that, because because you're basically asking it to be something that it's not. You know, put yourself in the shoes of a kid in 1981 watching the syndicated series, you know?
Yeah. I feel like if someone's like, how should I watch Gundam? Where should I start? It's like, start with the original, but take your time. Put in the effort. If you have to be patient and maybe you just watch a couple episodes a week, you know, because, yeah, I Yeah, I know that you can get burnt out and not realize, you know, that you are.
Yeah, and I can't tell you how many music artists I just was repulsed by the first time I heard them. I was like, this man, this music's trash. I don't want to listen to this. But, you know, I don't know if it's just that I repeatedly was forced to listen to it, or I gave it time to, you know, maybe, you know, when I was younger, I was definitely a much more angry person. So it's like I listened to angry music. And so if I gave myself time to fall into a, you know, a state of happiness or a state of sadness, then I can appreciate a happy or a sad song in a way that I couldn't when I wasn't in that state of mind. So,
you know, that's very interesting, because I wonder how much we gravitate to liking, and it could be anything, but music, due to what emotionally it might be representing, or how much it depends on our state that we then might enjoy something. Because, like, I think my taste in metal music has changed. I used to just strictly like thrash, and I'll go listen to all the old thrash I listen to, but new thrash, it's like, what is the, but then it kind of transitioned to like black metal. But even lately, I feel like it's like, okay, I got out of that phase to where it's almost too dark, where lately what my main has been is Castlevania music, because I feel like what it does is it evokes more adventure instead of like an actual emotion.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that's what some punk and metal does real well. It evokes action, you know, like, or that's why I really got into electronic music because of Blade. Because when I saw a fight scene at that trance club or whatever, I'm like, holy crap. So then, because I don't know if you remember when the trailer for the X-Men movie came out, that first one, it had this really awesome Blade sounding electronic music that's not in the movie, but it was for the trailer. Yeah. And I think they were trying to evoke that, and that was like the thing.
Yeah. Trying to capture that same energy. Which honestly, you know, at the end of the day, as iconic as the whole, like, what's there's like that stinger in the X-Men movies. It sounds a lot like the Sam Raimi Spider-Man, like the ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-da.
Oh yeah. I know what you're talking about. Yeah.
You know, as much as we come to identify that with the old X-Men movies, like, I kind of wanted to see the EDM version, like the trancey, like nightclub music version. I mean, that was what was all that era was about. Like the Matrix movies were like super techno, like.
Yeah. Yeah. That was interesting. So that is interesting to think about how, music can, you could be drawn to music because of an emotional state, or how it evokes the emotion, but also it might be due to like culture at the time, what everyone's into. Mm-hmm. Although it's funny, because normally I tend to not, and it's interesting. It's not like I don't get it. I think it's like we were just talking about how you have to put the time into it. And like, for me, I didn't care about guitars until, again, like I saw people actually like playing on stage, like punk music. And you know, electronic music, it wasn't until it was in the context of martial arts fight scenes.
Right. Because then that I was appreciate
like,
it more.
It's okay, like, now okay. I like techno. Yeah. And then I guess to circle this back to Gundam, you know, like, that's why I like what they're doing with the music in Requiem for Vengeance, because while it's badass sounding, it is different. And I think it leans more into that Western American style of military action music. And that's what it evokes. It evokes the action for me. So, but again, we've only heard very little, but the very little was actually pretty cool. So,
I'm very excited to hear what the rest of the score sounds like. That said, you know, anything with some of those fat Zeta bass lines over top of it just looks great.
that is, I want to do like a retrospective on the Zeta music, because when I first heard the music in Zeta, it wasn't a matter of getting used to it. It was immediately like, wow, this is different and it works. It evokes, I think what it did maybe a little bit is evoke nostalgia because of the time period. The animation I'm seeing versus the way it sounds.
Yeah.
So that could be part of it, but it's still an incredible soundtrack.
I mean, Sometimes I'll throw on like the four theme, like Cinderella four.
Oh yeah.
Just because like, and I've talked to people about this before, is like, I want to make a mashup of that and Human Nature by Michael Jackson, because I think that the lyrics from Human Nature by Michael Jackson would go over top of that track so perfectly. And then especially once that guitar solo comes in and it's like heavy reverb, is like so, you know, hairband 80s.
That is a very 80s like pop rock, or like
a ballad.
Yeah, there you go. It's one of those things, and it's done really well. And considering that is still kind of earlier at that part of the 80s for music to kind of be that edgy in that direction. And then something else here real quick. Lucas Garrett, I appreciate the Gundam Build Fighter soundtrack because it reminds me of what the late, great Robert Miles would have made back in the 1990s. I'm not familiar with that, so I'm glad I'm reading this to hopefully ingrain it in my brain, because I have Build Fighters on Crunchyroll. So I could be watching it at any time. Well, actually, let me ask you real quick before we get into this next part. What's something you've been watching, even if it's not Gundam, anything?
Let's see. So my wife and I just watched that that Netflix series about the Menendez brothers, and you know that.
Do you recommend it?
I can't personally recommend it. It's a Ryan Murphy thing. My wife and I we must be masochists, because we watch everything that Ryan Murphy does, and we complain about the same thing every single series that he does. Amazing suspense and great storytelling for about three episodes, and then just loses all stamina. And it's like,
is this the guy that does like American Horror Story?
Yeah.
In the 911 shows.
Oh, does he do the 911 shows? I know he did Glee back in the day, but
because like those 911 shows get very visceral and sad.
Mm.
And it kind of evokes that, where it's like on that edge of that kind of like, not death, but it has that balance where it's creepy, sad things to deal with.
Yeah. And at that point, like there, it's almost gratuitous. Like you're experiencing these like horrific things just to like, you enjoy them? Like,
well, yeah. So that's the thing. Like in this, one of these 911 shows, most of the main character they eventually go through a horrific incident.
Mm.
And it's, then they do again, like a guy got a pole through his head.
Jeez.
He lived, but then you're like, oh my God. Yeah. And, it's like, it's a great character. His name is, what is his name? It's like Chimney is his nickname, but I think his real last name is Chim or something like that. Mm. And they just call him Chimney. Like, I forget what it was, but they have pretty good characters, but it does that where it's all like, visceral, like, gratuitous, all that stuff.
Now, one thing I will recommend is that Mr. McMahon documentary. It's about Vince McMahon, the guy that did WWE. Yeah. It retreads a lot of the same stuff that, like, if you're a wrestling fan, you've probably already heard all of these stories. But if you're not, like, hearing all of them for the first time is probably going to blow people's minds, because it's like...
So that would be worth watching, you think?
Yeah, I think so.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I'll watch it with my wife.
But yeah, what about you guys? What have you been watching?
Yeah, so this was brought up because when I was talking to Gavin, he had brought up a Jackie Chan movie. He had brought up that he had been training in Kung Fu or something. I'm like, what the? I wish I had more time to talk about that. I have been on a Jackie Chan, like... I've been watching, not only Jackie Chan.
Bronx.
Well, I haven't watched that yet. I'm saving that because that's my favorite.
Okay.
So every year or two, I do like a Jackie Chan rewatch. And the one that connected with me, it's kind of like with Gundam. When I go back and watch some, like some connect and some don't. This time, Twin Dragons.
Do you remember that one?
And something I appreciated I didn't realize from before is they purposely choreographed the fight scenes to be more martial arts moves instead of the comedic, but still Jackie Chan doing his flow.
Yeah.
And then when I was watching, I was like, the kicks are badass. Like, it's a lot more of that.
A little bit more physical.
Yeah. And then it got me to then find a whole new genre of kung fu movies from the 80s. It's I think they call it Girls with Guns. So, like, one has, like, Michelle Yeoh. There's Cynthia Roth. Rock, I think her name is, or something like that. They're badass martial artists, and they do these action movies. And
sweet.
Sometimes I don't know why it's like more compelling, or maybe because I usually see, you know, Jackie Chan or the guys always do it, but to see these girls do this badass martial art, like there's this scene in, I think it's in the Line of Duty 2 is what it's called, where they jump into this room and the guy, she like shoots on the table and then gets under the table because the guy's throwing a grenade. And then while she's under the table and sticking out, she kicks her foot up at the grenade back to the guy. And it's like, oh, that's just the perfect like action scene thing. And then there's a guy on the roof with grenades and the two girls are chasing him. And he's, because he's trying to kill this princess that came to visit. And then he takes the grenades, he goes to throw him, but then they throw ropes around him, I guess, to like tie him like this. And it's on this pole and they pull him up to the pole and like Michelle Yeoh jumps off the roof to pull him. So he's up at the top and then explodes. It was like for 80, whatever. That's awesome.
Like jump the shark action moments. Like they're amazing.
Dude. And that was the beginning of the movie.
That's just the beginning.
Yeah. Those,
if you can find it, I think a movie you would really enjoy is it's a Korean action comedy called Guns and Talks.
Guns and Talks.
Yeah. Okay. It's about four hitmen brothers that,
Oh yeah. Okay.
Same sort of, I mean, and I'm a big Chow Yun-fat guy. Cool. So like Better Good. Tomorrow, Hard Boiled, all those movies are fantastic. So
yeah. And, didn't he do that? What was that movie that it was a remake and then they remade it recently. Is it The Killer? Is that a Chow Yun-fat movie?
I think
where he meets the girl at the nightclub.
Yeah. Oh gosh, what's the name of that movie? Yeah, because
it's been a while, but I remember that was a really good one.
Yeah,
it's been a while, but and I guess bringing this up is because I think what I've been thinking about lately is how much I miss movies where a lot of the acting is also performative, mm-hmm. physically, and it reminds me of like Jim Carrey. You know, like,
yeah,
he's not doing martial arts, but he's evoking this physicality that not anyone can do. That's kind of like not only a trained thing because he'd been training himself, but, you know, like playing Robotnik like that.
Yeah,
Ed is perfect. And even though you might not think so, but it's that animating himself. And so, I think the same thing with Bruce Campbell. I think that's why I like Bruce Campbell a lot, because a lot of times in his roles, and you know, you might not ever hear me say this ever again, but he's not like the best actor, but because of his presence, his physicality, I don't care. I'm seeing a Bruce Campbell for Bruce Campbell.
I think what it comes down to is a lot of these stars that you're talking about, Bruce Campbell, Jackie Chan, Jim Carrey, they are people who are not afraid to look silly.
Yeah,
what it comes down to, you know, one of the things that drives me nuts about like modern action stars is that very few of them are. It's like The Rock. The Rock basically has it in all of his contracts that you're basically like not allowed to make a fool of him unless like he's in on the joke. Mm. Ryan Reynolds is the same way. It's like, you know, they always have to look cool. They always have to be the cool guy. And even when they're like the butt of a joke, like,
yeah,
it's because they're making the joke. It's not because like they're at the, you know what I mean? Like,
this is a really good point, because I remember that when the whole Sam Raimi, Bruce Campbell thing clicked with me was Evil Dead 2, of him being the scared buffoon. And then they're all like picking on him, all the deadites, until he fights back. I connect with someone where you see them when they're vulnerable or like they don't know how to react, they're shy, or that's a good point, because Jackie Chan, when he's in his fights, he's like making the faces. He's like, ow, you know, doing all that stuff. That's a really good point. And that makes me think more, even though there's this story I'm writing, and the idea is these pilots, there's these pilots, right? And I'm trying to write something that's like if a shmup was a movie, like Gradius, R-Type, whatever. And that's hard to do because you're just in a ship the whole time. But I made it where the beginning has the team in the pilot simulator. And what happens is in the main hotshot pilot tries to do something to be badass and it gets his teammate killed, but not really killed because it's a simulator. but that was enough to get him then off the squad for some time. And it's like,
he's way back up.
Yeah, it's like he's the most badass guy, but he thinks he's so badass, he's willing to do this. It's like, well, if you do this in a simulator, would you do that in real life? You know, and so I thought that would be a cool way to really open a character up. And so I think, I'm glad you brought this up because I really need to think about that. Like when I write and I'm thinking, okay, my favorite actors, my favorite characters, what are some qualities? And it's that showing
vulnerability.
Yeah.
Is what it is the vulnerability. It's like, you don't have to necessarily be goofy, but, and I'm a big fan of doing like the rug pulls. I think if you've ever played any of like the Midnight Club, like racing games or something like that, you know how sometimes they'll start you off with like the best car, like, oh, you've got a BMW M3 and like, it's all kitted out. You've got the nice paint job, but then it's like, no matter what, you're going to lose the first race and you lose your car. And so the entire game you spend like racing to get the car back.
Yeah.
I've done same thing when it comes to like tabletop games. Like, you know, one of the first Gundam games I ran, I was like, it's a Bawaku. You guys just launched out of a Salamis. You're fighting against Zeon. It's like the Zeon comes and starts shooting people down. Like things go crazy. And it's like, basically I set up the characters in like a no win scenario. And then as soon as one of them gets shot down, like screen goes dark. It's all a simulator. It's actually 0084 and you're like a Titans pilot that's training. And it's like, just to kind of get that rug pull moment of like, you know, you thought you were a badass in this like crazy scenario that you're familiar with, but then we, you know, cut it short. And it's a very effective way, like especially in video games, I think works really well.
Yeah. Video games. Yeah. It movies. Hey, even music, when the beginning is like, what is this? And then later, like, oh, remember the intro of the song, you know? And it's like, what was that song? I forget. Punk music was really good at that, where it would have like this intro that would be kind of whatever, and then bam. Okay. Before we get back to some cool stuff we're talking about, I don't want to forget this. Let me go to this real quick. It is taking me a while. Adam, where'd you put it? Oh, here we go. The new types that help make this channel possible. Thank you very much. Guys. Yeah. Who's that one? Actually, let me remove this. No, but yeah, Talkaholic. Thank you. Sieg New York in the chat. Thank you. We got Ian with Nonstop Collectors, Midnight Hatter, of course. And then Talos Mobius, whose crime fighting partner is Alter, AKA No One. He's got his channel there. You could check out too. I mean, they're part of our community. These people are awesome and they're supporting me and it's amazing.
And all fantastic creators in their own right. I mean,
yeah, you know, that's what's cool. It's like a creator's circle, which is a name of a predatory agency. Creator's circle. Creative circle is the name actually. Where it's like, you see a job advertisement, it's creative circle. Oh, that's what I want to do. And you apply, and then they like have you come in. They're like, where could we put him? And it's not real.
Yeah. Wait a second. This is all starting to sound very familiar.
Yeah. And then a shout out to Art Rovo Gundam. Check out the website. There's a deal going on. Link in description where you buy two things. Shipping is free. Even, I wonder if we talked about this, Hatter has helped out too. His technical involvement.
Yeah, you know, I think we mentioned this last week, is like, I'm a big fan of small businesses, you know, family owned operations and stuff like that. The owner over at Art Rovo is a super nice guy, and I'm really passionate about Gunpla. You know, if you want, you can even see a picture of him on the homepage. Like, he's there.
This is
not like some faceless corporation trying to sell you Gunpla. Like, this is a guy that's, you know, pouring his heart and soul into this project. And so,
He just likes this so much. He's like, I'm going to have my own store, which I've thought about that too, but I wouldn't know where to begin. And then this guy's doing it. And it's like, whoa.
I mean, it's really inspirational. And the fact is, like, he's so committed to like building the community and building like a knowledge base for people. It's not even like, to him, it's like, it's cool that I get to feed my family by doing this, but like, I also get to do something that I love and help people. And, you know, I've even asked him questions about, you know, my own Gunpla stuff. And like,
oh,
so, I mean, he's very cool guy. So,
yep. And he's always open to suggestions. Let us know or him know. Get with me if you want to let him know something. Like, he's always looking at ways he can improve and just make it the best experience for people. So that's awesome. Okay. Mm-hmm. Which hopefully he will be getting some stock in of that RX 78-2 version 2 of Real Grade. Hopefully
yes.
It's sold out now, you know, most places. I'm hoping to get one. So yeah, just check out there.
Same here.
Okay. Something else I want to show off real quick. So the other day in the Discord, this guy named Mafty, not the Mafty,
yeah, but not that Mafty
username, he posted this. And you know, I love like doing action figure photography. I you know, focus on the lighting. I used to do the things with the backgrounds, but then I looked at this and I'm like, whoa. There's a lot going on here. That is like really cool in terms of like, it looks like if anything, maybe he photoshopped that little light, but everything else is in camera.
Yeah.
I mean, and so here is the behind the scenes of that. So check that out. He's got this glass.
Yeah.
I guess wrinkled up saran wrap or something similar to that, maybe, or some other blue. That actually looks like the stuff in my vinyl records that holds the vinyl records. But,
yeah, just something to give it a little texture, right? Yeah. Like,
yeah, to give it the texture. The, you know, cotton swabs or whatever, the cotton balls that are used and then colored, which is the color part is a good idea, especially as it's more centered and then comes out. That kind of helps give off the fake lighting almost. And then, yeah, you can see the different light. Like he has the LED light that's pointed, it looks like down to kind of help not saturate it, but also light up the underneath.
It gives you like that swampy green underwater look so that, you know, when you're going through the clear plastic on top, you actually get a little bit of, you know, tonal quality there. This is like, you know, this is pro photographer stuff, like playing with light with it in this way.
Yeah. Like that, I would assume, I could be wrong, and this is like a great tip for anyone. There is just some little possibly Photoshop going on in the top right to make those rays come down with the little dots, but it's very minimally done where you don't even notice it. And just the bokeh effect for the background that kind of helps give off like being underwater and that debris, like, and then the top here. So yeah, using that bokeh just right to like, yeah, this is good stuff. Like this looks like production shots for like the actual thing or whatever. So again, I will let you guys know, he actually didn't submit this. I just asked him because I liked it. But if you do want to submit something in the Discord, there's the Gunplan Collectibles. I have a pinned comment that's a form. Just throw it in there with your name, a picture up to 5 with your name and a description. And I'll check that out. In fact, okay, just checking if there's another one in there, but no. Okay. I didn't want to leave anyone out, so.
No, these are great shots. So. No,
that is.
Good work, Mafty. Stay off of airplanes.
Yeah. Okay, so I want to kind of circle back real quick, because what I liked in Hathaway, you know, speaking of Mafty, was his physical combat skill, especially on an airplane.
You know, I'm glad that you bring that up, especially in the context of the conversation that we were having about like choreography and stuff like that, because I think that that's probably missing from a lot of Gundam series, but the Hathaway movie had like hand-to-hand combat in it that was dynamic and interesting.
Yeah, and that's what's cool about it being animation. Like, it really evoked a lot of James Bond for me, that movie in general, and I think I really liked it for that. And so yeah, like being able to pull off believable, and I think the voice actor helped too, of just pulling off kind of a believable dude doing martial arts, but like in an anime where it's like a serious subject. It's not something goofy, it's not Dragon Ball level of like it's like he's doing the hand. But for the character himself, for Hathaway, like I would be curious if they do some background in his training. How did he, because there's one thing to have an ideal and want to move forward with it, but then to have the discipline to train, how he was able, because think about this. He was technically secretly undercover. He's on this plane in a way, you know, it's like people know who Mafti is and are looking for him. But like, while this other dude's pretending to be him, and then he's on the plane too. But then how he's able to just take out the guy, you know, like on a plane that's in space too. So like, I don't even want to be in a plane, but a plane in space. So because if there was any background to that, when would he be training, you know, during
right. the event? Like, I mean, is it, yeah, I guess it would have been, you know, between Unicorn, cause you don't really see Hathaway and Unicorn. Nope. And you barely see Bright, honestly.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I would even love to just see the emotional fallout between Bright and Hathaway, where it's like, because clearly, you know, their paths diverged at some point. And I don't think that it was wholly because of what happened in Char's counterattack. I think that there was probably more that went on between them.
Yeah. And you know what? That makes me think, too, like it would, and this could happen easily because it's animation to have flashback sequences. And it would make sense to do that in the sequel because the first one is more to set up a movie and not to confuse people. But once you get to a sequel, you can kind of start going a little more into the depth of characters. So, yeah, I would love to see, you know, because, again, we can look at it as Anakin turning to Darth Vader, Quattro going back to Char. You know, what is Hathaway to Mafti?
Carrazzo Rona going to Iron Mask.
Well, we know what happened there. His wife was like, "Nah, I'm not with you anymore." And then
my wife
downhill.
No, you know, and what's interesting to me about Hathaway is that, you know, like you said, there's not a whole lot of mobile suit combat in that first movie, and it almost feels more like a Bourne movie, like a Jason Bourne type thing, where it's like, you know, you have this guy and the girl on the run. You know, there's obviously some political intrigue at play, and I love whenever any kind of franchise can pull this off where they take like a tried and true movie formula and then they just like put that, you know, whether it's the cape twist on it, like with the Captain America movies, which I think are entirely underrated, the first two, because like the first one being like basically a World War II movie, but with Captain America in it. And then the second one being basically a Jason Bourne movie, but with Captain America in it.
Yeah. What's really cool about Hathaway, especially that was earlier on in my Gundam journey. Like it was cool that was like a new release. And then when it came out and I watched it, it was like, I was blown away by how mature and how well done it was. And you know what it reminds me of, the inverse, is that first Aquaman movie. Like I'm watching it, and to be honest, the first Aquaman movie is not a bad movie, but sometimes there's just so much action that I'm just like, what am I
struggling identity wise?
Yeah. It's just, I'm just seeing spaghetti on the screen. Like there's not enough interesting story to then make me on the edge of the seat for the action, because in the action's in context of the story. So what does that mean? You know? So when a movie just has action everywhere. And that's why I like Jackie Chan movies, because I think they purposely always try to set that up. Like, what did he get himself into now? And then what's around him he can use to defend himself? And
yeah, I mean, I think what's fantastic about all Jackie Chan movies is that before any fight happens, they establish the stakes of that fight, right?
Yeah.
So it's like, you know, for like the girl in the wheelchair that has like the drugs hidden in the wheelchair. Is it drugs or money? I forget what it was, but it was like something she has hidden in the cushion of her wheelchair that the gangsters are trying to steal from her.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, they set that up before the fight starts. And so then, you know, what the stakes are, like it everything's kind of laid out. When people just kind of jump into a fight and you're not really sure, like, well, why can't they just run away? It's like, well, you know, you need to have the rules of the fight set up for the audience, right? Like, well, he can't just run away, because if he runs away, then they're just going to take the thing from the girl. And so it's like, okay, so he can't leave the girl. He has to fight the guys. The guys aren't going to give up until, okay. So now you have like tension and conflict going on.
And I'm glad you brought up that example, because I loved that story, because Jackie Chan was helping, you remember, take care of the boy or something, because he was like across and he was kind of like helping him, and she like knew of him, but she, I guess, and then she was involved when they were like beating him up in the street, but she didn't know. And then found out, I guess, cause he came in all like that whole, yeah, again, great storytelling in that movie. Cause they're setting that up. I love it when that happens in movies where, because that is again, kind of going to what we're talking about, where like you're seeing the vulnerability of the character, and that is her failings as being with a gang, even though she's got this brother that she needs to help that's in the wheelchair. And
brother, sorry, yeah, my bad.
Well, yeah, it's because the sister and then the brother, and then yeah, and so like that dynamic when something's revealed and someone was in a position where they're like, oh, now their whole view of that person changes, and it's like, oh, now that person is deciding to go the good route, and that's great to see. I think sometimes people don't realize like how inspirational I think it is to see when people are deciding to do good and then help the main character.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I think you brought that up to me the other night when we were talking about Transformers.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. I'm glad you brought that up actually, because I do want to do my Transformers review right now. Transformers 1, I would title it, It's Not a Gundam. But no, real quick, if anyone hasn't seen that new Transformers 1, see it. And this is coming from someone that has no, I watched it when I was a kid, but again, I don't care for sentient robots. So I never really followed it. Don't know the lore. Don't know the backstory. And it started off with a very family friendly tone, but then it became its own thing and it went deep. Conspiracies, government cover-ups, death, like revenge, the way Megatron became Megatron, even though I don't know his backstory, the way they did this, I'm like, oh my God. Like I would watch that again when it comes out on digital, like, because it's just like, and it's fast paced. There's not one time when I'm like, all right, when is this? It was just like, let me know if anyone in the chat saw the Transformers and what you thought.
Yeah, I mean, when it comes to like pacing a story, like you want that, like the waves to come, right? Like lots of fast action, and then you cool down and you have some time to breathe, and then you build it back up again. But I think, yeah, what you said was like, a good story is a good story. It doesn't matter if it's animated, doesn't matter if it's about robots, animals, like
if you
have the bones of a good story, when you have characters that have conflict with one another, you know, the details almost don't matter. And I think that that's what has resonated with Gundam for, you know, 45 years, is that at the end of the day, even though it was a toy commercial for super robots for kids, the bones of the good story were there. And you had this character tension that was going on, that, you know, and even to this day, I think you and Gavin Hignite talked about like American audiences and their apprehension to give cartoons a fair shake, right? Like, or animation, I should say. Like, I think even just saying cartoon kind of,
I know. I sometimes I'm like, cartoon. And I hate when my wife is like, you're going to watch your cartoons? Are you watching your cartoons right now? Woman, boom! No, okay.
My God. Yeah.
But funny, you know, really quick, where was it? Robert was like, Jackie Chan was drunk as a monk, or it was a drunk monk. And in fact, last night I was watching Drunken Master.
Oh, Drunken Master, so good.
Yeah. So that's kind of funny that Robert brought that up. But real quick from the chat. So like Lucas Garrett's going to wait when it comes out digitally. He doesn't like Orion Pax's arms, you know, as a fan of things. And then I see interpretations. I get it.
yeah. I mean, man, I'm going to go back to, we were talking about it last night because we were talking about the Gundam card game, but like that Transformers Legends mobile card game, there was a Orion Pax special card that it was like a 4-stage card. So you had like levels 1 through 4. The first one is Orion Pax, and it transforms, like he transforms into truck mode and then transforms into Optimus Prime. One of the coolest looking card art I've ever seen.
How similar is that to that personality system you were talking about in the DBZ card game?
Pretty similar. Yeah.
I like that. I really like that idea. Is that still on mobile, that Transformers one?
No, discontinued, unfortunately.
That happens. Yeah. And then so let's see. Yeah, Ultronimus. I enjoyed it greatly. Love seeing the IDW influence since their take on Cybertronian society is just so good. That's cool.
Yeah.
It is weird.
Something you and I talked about, because I was like, you know, yeah, the IDW comics cover like Orion Pax, Optimus Prime's best friend being killed.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And then I was like, wait a minute. That's kind of like part of what happens in. Yeah. So that's pretty interesting. So is there a picture of Terry Crews in front of a unicorn? That's pretty cool. We got to have some sort of repository of celebrities with Gundams, because we already got some Lord of the Rings dudes.
Yeah. I'm getting tired of seeing that one Carl Urban holding a bunch of Zaku's. And
yeah. And then that guy, what's his name? That see, how does that work when I say what's his name? Are you really going to answer it? The rock and roll dude from the 90s with the long hair and the white shirt.
Oh, Andrew W.J.?
Yeah, he had that Gundam album.
He did. And the cover to that album, like the artwork is fantastic.
It evokes Victory era artwork.
Yeah, I mean, dude, I want someone to draw me in front of a Zeta Gundam like that in those watercolors. Like, maybe like minus 15 pounds.
No. Yeah, I get you there. This is pretty interesting because Gregory Zirkoff is saying, I think if they market it to G1, it'll do worse. And just overall, the marketing, because I don't know Transformers, to be honest, I didn't even really plan on watching it. It's just that there was just more of an effort for the family to go to movies on the weekend. So it's like, well, let's just go see this. And but if on my own, I don't think I even would have bothered watching it, even though they said Chris Hemsworth did the voice. It's like, I don't care. You know, like... So I wonder if that's just hard to market.
I mean, a little bit. It seems like Transformers recently to me seems like it's struggling with identity, right? Like, you know, because they went in that. I mean, the Bumblebee movie was apparently really good. I haven't seen it, but then they did like the whole Rise of Beasts movie. And it's like, okay, we're going to try and tap into like the Beast Wars nostalgia that people have got going on. Transformers 1 to me seems like more of a passion project, something that's not designed to like capitalize on people as much as like, we just want to tell what we think is a really cool story, because like everyone knows Optimus Prime and Megatron, whether you watched the 80s cartoon or whether you watched the Michael Bay movies, everybody knows Megatron and Optimus Prime. So let's take it back and we're going to do the prequel thing so that we can tell you why there's so much bad blood going on here. I don't think that it's necessarily... It's not like saying, ooh, we're going to get those G1 fans and like then we're going to get them to buy more toys. It's like, no, we're all in our 40s now. Come on, dude. Like, we're not
buying everything anyway. You know, yeah, because you do have to get a new group of fans in, because I think it's hard, especially kids nowadays, to really be into the sentient robot the way they look, because everything is arbitrary. The design, you know, of everything, it's not necessarily so it's kind of noisy in a way. And like even my kids never really cared. Transformers was never a thing in this house. Like, you know, they, and so
in this house, we watch Gundam. Gundam is
Gundam. I'm telling you, they don't even care. Even I dressing up as Batman for Halloween, even my youngest is, I was like, go as Robin. He's like, nah, nah. So it's like, I really think there is something to be said where these things that seem like they've been cool for a while, really the younger kids kind of don't care, because
the only thing that still hits is Sonic, apparently.
Yeah.
My kids love Sonic. Your kids love Sonic.
I think
Sonic,
I know why.
The Eternal.
I think it's because there's not many cartoony characters that just kind of come off cool and edgy, like kind of by default, you know, almost like, cause he has these one liners, you know, Mario, what's Mario's personality?
Yeah, I mean, I think that they even struggled with that with the Mario movie. It's like, okay, well, I guess we're just going to make him and Luigi both bumbling idiots, because like...
Yeah, I know. And that's the thing with Sonic. He has this... Because that's kind of that vulnerability. It's like a kid seeing this cartoon character, but act like he talks back. And he's like, gotta go fast. You know, I bet there's some drawing them to that. So,
Yeah. The same stuff that made us listen to The Offspring is that rebellious spark.
That's exactly it. Actually, it was a lot of Crazy Taxi. Playing Crazy Taxi. I got other songs. I never knew. I'm telling you, Crazy Taxi, I never knew drummers could play that fast. And I was like, I'm in. I'm sold. I didn't know people did that. It's not on the radio. When I hear Offspring on the radio, it's that Pretty Fly. What the? My mind was blown when I found that out. Like, that they can make music that's like this fast stuff. I was like,
those were the days, man. Like Tony Hawk soundtrack. Like that inline skating game that I was a huge fan of back in the day. And I basically wanted to listen to that. It's like I found bands like Student Rick and like other like pop punk bands.
I love how video games do that. But you know what? This was a great show, especially because I've been so busy. I didn't really have time to put anything together yet, dude. We have so much cool stuff to talk about. It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Like it's and the chat. Always fun.
We didn't even get to talk about like the two biggest things. Obviously, you know, you did put up the flyer that Requiem for Vengeance comes out in 7 days.
I know.
And then right when that's over, guess what comes to YouTube on the Gundam Info channel? Mobile Suit Zeta Gundam, the HD remaster. So yeah, I think it's October 25th, I want to say.
I forget, but like, do they do it where they live stream it first at the same time and then it's just always up for a while?
I think they, secretly, like inside baseball, what they do is all of them are uploaded to YouTube and they just mark them unprivate.
Yeah. But there are sometimes when I'm up early in the morning and I go on YouTube, like they're live streaming them. And it's like, that would be cool, but it's just the wrong time for us here. It would be cool to like do a live, like just watch and chat. But anyway, we're going to get out of here, guys. This was a lot of fun. We will talk later. See y'all.
Cheers.